Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Brown at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 107. And Dave, I think I might just listen to you talk. We don't have a lot to talk about.
Oh, I can tell you about a colonoscopy I just had. That should...
Sure, that gets people moving around.
Oh, you want to talk about moving around? I'm glad to be back on a diet that doesn't include anything in the title lax in it. That was number three for me. And I tell you, the prep for that stuff, you never look forward to it. But hopefully I don't have to do another one of those for 5 years. And it looks like I'm, done with the majority of my doctor's appointments until after I get out back from my trip from out of town there next week. So, and I think I've timed that trip almost perfectly, too. Because the Steelers mandatory rookie minicamp is underway on this Friday. Looks like 20 tryout players, along with the 13 undrafted free agents, the 7 draft picks, quite a handful of first-year players as well. And boy, there's some interesting names, as far as these tryout players go, David. And do you remember Mike Minter?
Mike Minter, I feel like I do. Defensive back?
Yeah, he was a safety for years with the Carolina Panthers. Boy, it just seems like yesterday he was playing in the NFL. His son is one of the several tryout players, this weekend, looking hopefully to get signed here. And that's the name. I haven't even looked at his, I'm so far behind trying to look at several of these guys, but he's just one of a few very interesting tryout players. And as we've seen in the past, with the Steelers, a few of these tryouts probably won't be really surprising to see, one or two of these tryout players, get signed to a contract here in the next few days here. Now, obviously, a lot of eyes will be on these draft picks, and Minter is a name that obviously sticks out. And of course, Christian Scotland Williamson, the international exchange player, tight end, will be joining the team this weekend. That's another guy, he'll be eligible for an 11th practice squad spot this year for the Steelers. And one name that people probably asking about that are not seeing on the list is Keon Adams. And the Steelers 7th round draft pick last year spent his rookie season on IR because of a shoulder injury that required surgery. But they got to do something with these rules, David. He's because he accrued a season, it doesn't look like he's able to participate, in this rookie minicamp. And that's a shame. They're going to have to do something, and maybe in this next CBA or off season, owner meeting type things to allow players that, let's say a player does not spend any time on an active, game roster. Those type of players should be able to participate in these things, I would think.
You would think. I mean, there's so many things now that are restrictive in terms of what guys are able to do. But they changed the practice squad rules. That's a huge positive. A guy like Josh Dobbs, obviously would be I don't think Josh actually even dressed for it. He dressed for the game against Cleveland, I guess, at the end of the year. But being on the 53, what do you do? Whether you dress, they've given opportunity to, look, we talk about all these guys. One of the big things that came out of the draft was, I think it was 37% of the guys. There were roughly, let's say, 100 guys, underclassmen, 120, I can't remember the exact number, that declared for the draft. And every year, a percentage of them go undrafted. Now, one of the things that's been talked a lot about is education. Let these guys, you know, make sure they understand the opportunity of them being drafted. Now, I don't want to speculate on guys, but you get a guy like Quadri Henderson. Help me out here.
Quadri Henderson out of Pitt. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's a guy. Look, him going to college for another season and playing with Pitt, maybe it develops him a little bit more as a route runner. Probably not. The honest answer is probably not. He is what he is as a return guy, is going to be his specialty. He's not, you know, going another year isn't going to move him from an undrafted free agent to a second round pick. Highly unlikely. But if you're an offensive tackle, if you're a Xavier Grimble type of guy who's a tight end who's looking to be developed, you know, another year of school might help you out. It's one of the things about the NFL, you know, with no developmental league, no G League or what used to be the D League in the NBA or minor league baseball, you don't have, you know, you go look at the other three major sports or what we consider the other three major sports. You've got a place to go if you don't develop. And so for these guys, you know, they've lightened the burden a little bit in terms of the letting guys go to the practice squad, giving more eligibility to be practice squad eligible. But, you know, for these guys, it's a tough thing. If you can't get to the practice squad, you know, in your second year or your third year, if you don't have the option, there's nowhere for you to go. You go play in Canada. You're not coming back. There's nowhere else to go. The biggest failure of football in the U.S. right now is that lack of development. You know, we'll see if all these other leagues that are coming, you know, gonna start in the next year, if any of them get any traction. But the biggest failure is for guys. If you don't make it right away, you see all these guys signing future contract days. How many of these guys do we see? You see. He was in camp with the Falcons and he got cut. He was in camp with the Packers. He got cut. There's nowhere to go. So you sit during the season, you're out, and then maybe you get to sign a futures contract when nothing's going on, and then all you get is this, and then maybe go to camp. So, you know, it's a very interesting thing. It's not going to get better because, you know, who knows where football is going to be 20 years from now. But for guys who don't make it right away, unfortunately, you almost never make it.
Yeah, and a lot of these guys' NFL careers will end after this weekend, you know.
How many are there? How many are there just guys just showing up?
Yeah, I think there's 20 tryout players on the Steelers alone.
Yeah, so for 15 of these guys, it'll be the last time they play football.
Right, and you know, and then multiply that by 32, obviously, and then probably add a few more on to that. So, you know, the developmental leagues and all like that, like you said, I mean, look, I would watch it in off season, you know, but I mean, even the NFL calendar now, geez, I mean, you know, it keeps us busy on the site, you know, just keeping up with content during the offseason, what the NFL calendar is now, the way they have this thing stretched out. So, you know, it makes you wonder how much interest there would actually be in a developmental league. And obviously, it needs money to survive, and that means, you know, advertising and eyeballs watching the games, even though it would be good for players to maybe one or two, you know, maybe three players out of the league or something like that, you know, end up really, really benefiting there. But, yeah, it just you know, when you look at a guy like Keon Adams, and look, you brought up another good name, Joshua Dobbs, you know. Why can't that guy compete in this rookie mini camp? You know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He needs the reps. He needs the time. I don't know what the. I mean, you know, it's not. I don't want. Let's not overplay it. It's not that big a deal. But you know, these guys. So what we've learned, basically, what we've learned in union negotiations over the last couple of negotiations for both the NFL and Major League Baseball, not the NBA. The NBA got it right. Is they screwed these things up so badly because they don't recognize what's important. Major League Baseball negotiated for guys to have an extra seat on buses for spring training games instead of getting minor leaguers more money. Instead of trying to reduce the service time to get to free agency from 6 years to 5 years or 4 years, would make a massive impact on the game. They want, you know, for 20, you know, 15 guys going to ride 15 away games, and probably the veterans maybe going to go on half of those. So 7 or 8 games, they want to negotiate an extra seat on a bus for a 2-hour bus ride instead of negotiating important stuff. And the NFL, they get their ass kicked in the negotiation as well. And, you know, the more significant things. And, you know, I think they realize it now, but they were so concerned about fewer practices, fewer padded practices. You know, that stuff's important. Don't get me wrong. I think we all understand, you know, the nature of the game, CTE and you know, all the things we've learned. All those things are significant. They didn't address – and again, and then this is the nature of unions, right? You don't address anything for the new guys or the younger guys. You address everything for the guys who are actually – the veteran guys, which obviously in the NFL, those by definition in both sports, they're the guys making the most money. But, you know, are you ever looking out for the new guy? And they haven't. And they, and these things, you know, these things for the young guys doesn't, you know, a lot of the things, the rules don't seem to be impactful or helpful.
Agreed. Looking at the mini camp roster for those and you know, interested in what we might consider the higher priority undrafted free agents. I don't have all the signing bonuses in yet. I have most of them in, I think. I'm waiting to get a few clarified with our buddy Joel Corey. But it looks like your kind of your highest, for judging by the signing bonuses, your highest priority guys look like Jamar Summers, a defensive back out of UConn, is going to be one of them. Matthew Thomas, the inside linebacker out of Florida State, looks like he's going to be one of their higher priority undrafted free agents. Patrick Morris, a center out of TCU, is another one. And Greg Gilmore, defensive tackle out of LSU. Those look and sound like of the 13 undrafted free agents that the team has signed. Those look to be the high priority ones, the ones that, you know, you would think the team probably expects to show the most right now through rookie minicamp and you know, obviously moving on in into the rest of the offseason there. And obviously any of these guys, I mean, we've seen it in the past. Who was it? Terrence Garvin a few years ago went from being a tryout player to getting signed to the signed to the offseason 90-man roster to make it the 53-man roster. So you know, you can't discount. I mean, look at Roosevelt Nix, you know, a few years ago as a futures guy too. You know, so you never know what's going to come out of these group of players. And you know, it's easy to say, you know, a lot of people don't like us throw around the term camp bodies anymore, and that's fair because a lot of these guys that we've considered maybe in the past as being camp bodies have ended up surprised. And I tell you one area where
they're camp bodies. They're mostly camp bodies.
Most of them are, absolutely. I would like to see a few of these edge rushers maybe show something. You know, we talked about Keon Adams. It'd be interesting to you know, it's unfortunate that he's not going to be able to participate in this rookie minicamp. This is a guy that, man, the, you know, the Steelers didn't draft an edge rusher this year. You know, you got obviously Watt, y'all. You know, you had Dupree, Chickalo, and then after those three, man, I mean, you're trying to fill out the rest of that depth chart right now gets kind of tough. And you would think, I mean, at least on paper where we sit right now, you would think they're going to carry 5 edge rushers on the 53, right?
Yeah. I'd be shocked if they didn't have 5. But, yeah, you know, who the 5, who the 5th is a wide open game.
Yeah, and you know, and we're automatically giving Keon Adams a pass to the 4th, you know, spot right now. So that'll be definitely something to watch as the rest of this offseason plays out. The Steelers have come to terms on a handful of their draft picks already. Jalen Samuels, the running back out of North Carolina State, was the first one to sign. Since then, Marcus Allen, the other 5th round pick, safety out of Penn State, is signed, and then Joshua Frazier, the defensive tackle out of Alabama, has signed, and that obviously means the team's top 4 draft picks: Terrell Edmonds, James Washington, Chukwuma Okorafor.
Yeah, right.
Chooks.
Okorafor.
Okorafor. There you go. He has yet to sign, and of course Mason Rudolph has yet to sign. You would think maybe those two third rounders, Rudolph and Chooks, maybe get signed by come the end of this weekend and all. So that's pretty much where we stand as far as rookie minicamp goes.
Okay, Ben, Mason Rudolph, Jeremy Fowler, Tommy Maddox, blah blah blah.
Yeah, Tommy Maddox has gone on record in an interview with Fowler. I think Ben will treat him with respect. Maddox told ESPN from his classroom at Decatur High School in Texas, where he serves as a head baseball coach and is preparing for the playoffs. His number one goal is to get ready to play and help the team be successful. I've heard a lot of people say he owes it. That kind of gets into a little bit of a slippery slope. His job is to win football games right now. But with that said, I think everybody in the locker room, the more it gets along, the better this team is going to be, whatever that means.
Look, I'm from the beginning, I just dismiss everything Ben says. He's gonna. I don't think there'll be any problem. I think he'll end up being, buddies with Mason Rudolph, and it'll be fine. That's my view. And like you said, man, Ben hadn't had a camera in his face for 3 months.
Yeah. I mean, now that it's out, we talked the other day, it's out there in May. That means, by the time training camp rolls around, we'll be talking about a little bit less. And then now, obviously, when the OTAs get underway here in a couple more weeks, I'm sure our camera will be back in Ben's face. And I'm sure he'll, not necessarily recant things that he said, but kind of frame them in a different light and all like that. Yes, it's Ben being Ben. None of it's a surprise. Like I said in the show the other day, look, I mean, I'm all for speaking your mind, and we get on players at times saying, we're using cliches and all like that. There just some things are better, left unsaid, in my opinion, and I'll leave it at that. I don't hate Ben for any of this. I'm not shocked by anything he said by any stretch of the imagination. I think Rudolph's handled it well, and I think as this thing gets, further along into the off season. We'll parse a few more quotes and go from there. But, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. I have nothing to add. Good on Jeremy to get Maddox. There's some nice anecdotes in the story. That's it.
Okay. Of the Steelers draft picks, would you agree or not agree that Jalen Samuels is probably the most intriguing one of the bunch?
Well, I mean, I think nobody's going to agree with that, because I think, if you're not picking Mason Randolph, I think you're picking James Washington. Having said that, James Washington is probably going to see a lot of the field. Mason Rudolph is probably going to see none of the field, and who knows what Samuels is going to see, because Samuels, one of the things is, if you think about what defenses are doing and where the NFL is trending and what we saw from the Steelers with the offseason and the draft about how the personnel is likely to look defensively, it's because offenses are doing a lot of different things. And Samuels is a guy who, if he's on the field, all of a sudden creates problems for defenses. And the reason defenses are being structured differently is exactly because of guys. Now, I don't want to equate Samuels and Le'Veon Bell, but because of guys like Le'Veon Bell, who, all of a sudden, you see him in the huddle, you think you know where he's going to line up, but you're not quite sure, because he could do some different things. I'll tell you, the thing about Samuels is you have no idea where he's going to line up. None. I mean, this is why the Steelers drafted this guy. And again, I don't want to overplay a fifth round pick. Who knows? He might not even make the team. But if things work out the way everybody would like them to work out, you have a guy who could line up as a fullback, as the halfback, as an H-back, as a tight end, or split in the slot. I mean, I don't see him necessarily. He could be out wide, but it's probably less likely, the least likely. But that. that flexibility is why he got drafted and what makes him interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I think he might be the most intriguing because, well, A, if he's on the field, let's say he makes the 53. How are you going to get him on the field and who's coming off?
What situations? Jesse James is coming off. Jesse James is coming off. That's, you know, you line, he takes an extra tight end spot.
Yeah, but I just, in looking at his tape, I can't see where you're going to line him up as a tight end. Now, are you going
to? No, you're not lining him up as a tight end, but that's who's coming off the field.
So you're going to have him and Bell potential. Well, you're going to have him and Bell on the field at the same time.
I expect Le'Veon Bell to be on the field for 95% of the snaps. So it's not a contest of him and Le'Veon Bell.
Right. I just don't see how you can. I mean, you're going to give up an extra blocker if you take a tight end off the field. In those, because I mean, let's face it. I mean, in the instances, the few that he did line up, as let's say, an H-back just at the end of the line of scrimmage, just off the, a step off the line, you never see him blocking for runs or anything along those lines. So if he's in the game, he's either going to get the football in his hand via some sort of a end around or a shovel pass or lined up in the backfield and get a traditional handoff. I just got through breaking down. Boy, what a chore this was too. 76 of his rushes from 2007 from 2017 last season, notating and charting every one of these, where he lined up, his successful play rate, all the times where he touched the football, where it was kind of scored as a run. 16 of those rushes he aligned as a deep tailback with the quarterback under center. Okay, so sort of a traditional, 12 yards off the line of scrimmage, right in the eye, right behind a quarterback under center. 16 rushes, 82 yards, 6 touchdowns in those situations there. 27 other carries he was lined up. They used a lot of that pistol eye. Formation there at North Carolina State, and 27 of those rushes he lined up as the eye, either directly behind a pistol quarterback or offset, to the quarterback, and 148 yards, a touchdown in those situations. 13 times out of the 76 he was the Wildcat quarterback and took a direct snap. And you saw a lot of that mostly in like goal to go situations or short yardage situations there. And the 20 other times where he was scored, as carrying the football in 2017, he was like an H back or lined up in the slot, and taking kind of like an end around or kind of those type of runs. And he averaged 7.2 yards per carry. What I'm getting at here is only 43 times did he line up kind of like a traditional running back and get a handoff. Now, he had a good success rate. I mean, he averaged somewhere, I think, 5.2 something yards per carry on those 43 runs. And obviously, that's just one season. And you'd have to go through the rest of his tape from 2016, 15, and 14. I'm sure you'd find similar percentages there. But when you look at his sample size of runs, there wasn't a lot of differences in what he did. You know, they run a lot of that stretch, that stretch play with him out of the backfield when lined up in the backfield there. I've made it halfway through his reception or his targets from last season as well too. And man, there are a lot of screens with him either lined up, from the slot position, a lot of just misdirection, kind of passes out of the backfield type situation. However, there are some instances with him working out of slot and working the middle of the field and catching passes 7-8 yards down the field as well too. He's an extremely intriguing player, and I really think one of the biggest things, and I think I said this, in a podcast not long after he was drafted, He's just right now to me, he's just a bigger version, or obviously not as fast as a guy like a Dree Archer or a Chris Rainey. He's going to have to prove some things to me without the football in his hands, you know, in order to get himself some playing time, because you just can't put him on the field, and especially in third down situations, if he can't pass protect. Because, I mean, when you put him on the field, you can't do it with the assumption that, you know, he's just going to either run out in space or he's going to get the ball, you know, on some sort of design play there. But, I mean, there's no doubt about it that a lot of their offense at North Carolina State ran through him all 4 years, and specifically last season. Is just, to me, I mean, he's just such an intriguing player, and I'm interested to see how it's going to go with him moving forward there, because I think it is going to be hard to find a ways to get him on field. And look, this guy had, I think, five special teams. He played some special teams at North Carolina State. He's going to have to be a Swiss Army knife, do it all player, not only offensively, but he's going to have to contribute on, you know, one or two of these special teams groups as well too. I mean, I understand the pick. I mean, for a fifth round pick, you know, to have the offensive production that this kid had at North Carolina State, very intriguing. It's just, I'm just not quite sure where I sit with on him right now after watching 150 of his touch, almost 150 of his touches last season.
Yeah, I mean, the question to me is, are the Steelers going to, you know, use a guy, again, getting to the Quadri Henderson thing, are you going to use a guy who has specific and unique skills? You know, Quadri Henderson's a return guy and a jet sweep guy. And the thing about Samuels is, are you going to line a guy up? Are you all of a sudden going to use an H-back? Are you going to use a guy, you know, are you going to make things look a little bit different to throw a new wrinkle in the offense? And that'll be the interesting thing about watching Randy Feitner go to work here is, you know, we'll see we'll understand watching, you know, through the probably not much in the preseason, but through the first four or five games, we'll see if we can see the fingerprints of Randy Feitner on the offense. And one of those things will be him. Is he going to, if these guys make the team, if these guys dress, does he get them involved, and how does he get them involved? And when you have a guy who has a unique skill set, who is an undrafted free agent or a fifth round draft pick, it's a pain in the ass to try and get them involved, because obviously there's a reason they were undrafted or the fifth round draft pick is because they're not a complete player. So it's a challenge. Ultimately, those challenges generally don't succeed. So, you know, we'll see how they try to do it. We'll get a blueprint of it in the preseason games.
I think he can run. You know, I've seen enough of him carrying the football as kind of a true running back to think, because he did it all. You know, as far as he can run that stretch to the outside and seemingly does a decent job at getting that corner and knowing when to cut it up and all like that. You see him run quite a few times up the middle, you know, but between the tackles on a few of these runs as well too. Now, obviously, the jet sweeps and those kind of things. Now, if you're going to use them as an H-back and stuff like that, you know, we see the Steelers line their tight ends up and all like that, then run the split zone kind of stuff. But if you're going to line a guy up and be able to do that, then he's going to have to be able to block in those situations too, because, I mean, you're not going to use a guy, you know, like the Steelers. How many times do we see the Steelers line up in an H-back or even like Juju kind of as an H-back and then run that shovel pass? That's all cute and all and on. And the Steelers have had success with it most recently over the years when running those kind of things to Jesse and to Juju and those kind of things. And no doubt that Jalen Samuels can run those kind of plays too. But what's going to happen when the ball's not in his hands? You know, will he be able to come across the formation and kick out, the defensive end or the outside linebacker? Those are the things that I think most intrigue me about things that we did not see on tape with Jalen Samuels in college that one would think that we would expect to see with him, now with the Steelers. So, you know, he's just, to me, You know, that's why I started the conversation with him. He is, in my opinion, the most intriguing of these draft picks because trying to visualize how he was used in college and then, you know, carrying that over into how he's going to fit in with the Steelers. And for those of you that want to see all 76 of those runs, I have a post up on SteelersDepot.com contextualizing Jalen Samuels' 2017 season rushes at North Carolina State. Now, each one of those links are hyperlinked to the exact play. So, I mean, if you click on about the first 20, you don't have to obviously go through all 70 of those. But if you click on the first 15 to 20 of those in order there, it should give you a really good idea as to how he was used as a runner at North Carolina State. And, you know, sometime maybe this weekend or by Monday, I'll have all of his pass targets up in kind of a similar format as well. But, I mean, there's no doubt about it. A lot of their offense at North Carolina State ran through Jalen Samuels, and he is, in my opinion, the most intriguing of the Steelers' 7 draft picks this year.
Okay, what else we got?
Oh, geez.
Somebody got suspended. Mark Ingram.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you, because this popped into my head. Why do we look at PED use or substance abuse? Why do we look at it completely differently in baseball? First of all, it doesn't happen in hockey. Don't tell me nobody ever uses stuff in hockey. It almost never happens in basketball. I think Joakim Noah is the only guy I can think of. And he was, he talked about his massive injuries and what he was doing. So you're telling me that in those two sports, nobody uses PEDs, okay, which is complete nonsense. In baseball, you have to wear a scarlet letter for the rest of your life. And in football, you get 4 games and nobody ever talks about it again. Why is that?
You're more the baseball guy, David. Let me ask you this: I don't follow the new. I mean, I follow the signing, off season moves and stuff like that. I mean, other than that, there's not much news during a baseball season that happens off the field. So with that said, I mean, is a drug like Adderall or whatnot? I mean, is that illegal in Major League?
Well, a lot of guys have. Dispensation, basically. They've gotten usage. They're allowed to use it. I think that one of the things, in baseball, a lot of, again, speaking carefully and trying not to draw cultural lines, which I'm now going to draw, a lot of the risk reward for a guy who has nothing coming for a lot of the suspensions of late in the minor leagues have been Latin players, and this has been pointed out. And for those guys, maybe they view the risk reward of, making, a dollar a day doing whatever you're doing and, having a chance to move up through the system and potentially play Major League Baseball. If you think that edge is going to be the difference between you not getting a contract and you actually being getting an opportunity to play, well, then maybe you take your chances. In the NFL with these guys, I mean, start with Brian Cushing. I mean, rookie of the year, gets a 4-game suspension, plays, a ton, then gets a second suspension. We just kind of forget about it. I mean, I can't even tell you, I can list the guys, starting Marte, obviously the Pirates get suspended last year for 80 games. I can list for you the guys in baseball who get suspended. The suspensions are so severe and they're so widely talked about and the whole thing is so widely discussed. And the NFL, guys get suspended, nobody talks about it. Guys serve their 4 games. I mean, it was, Antonio Gates gets suspended at age, whatever, last year. At age whatever he is, to the back end of his career. And I had this conversation with Matt Williamson a bunch of times. And if you're Antonio Gates, if you do that and you get another year out of your career, that's another year at, whatever the number is, $8 million. It's a risk reward. It's a good thing because it's not going to tarnish your legacy. You're not going to not get into the Hall of Fame because you got suspended for PEDs. Baseball, you know, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, all these guys, clearly Hall of Fame type guys who aren't in the Hall of Fame because of that. In the NFL, no big deal. Just move along.
So I'm looking at some old headlines. I just Googled Adderall and MLB, and there's a lot of old stories. MLB's exemption rate for ADHD drugs, highly suspicious. Therapeutic use exemptions for Adderall down slightly in MLB. These are 2015 headlines, along those lines. So what you're telling me is, and I don't know, maybe our listeners know, maybe you know. I mean, is Adderall more... Do more MLB players use Adderall? I mean, is it less frowned upon? Do people have more exemptions? Do players have more exemptions for Adderall in MLB?
There are a lot of guys do. I don't know. I actually don't have any idea in the NFL how many guys have that.
No, I think now if you have a doctor, I think don't if in NFL if you have a prescription, you know, if you have approval for some of these ADHD drugs in the NFL, you can take them, right? If they have Adderall, I mean, but it's got to be prescribed by a doctor for NFL players, right?
Yeah.
I just wonder why we hear, you know, and all these guys say, well, I took this supplement. How come we hear more about it in NFL than we do in Major League Baseball? Is it just not written about as much? I mean, we hear.
I don't hear about it in the NFL. I don't know who the guys are in the NFL taking Adderall for.
Well, I don't think the league comes out and says that it's Adderall. I don't think they can. Okay.
Right. I pay pretty close attention to both. Obviously, and I don't hear about it even discussed in the NFL. And maybe I missed this, but I don't feel like I ever see this discussed.
All right. Well,
I mean, look, you some of these things you're way deeper into it than I am on the contract stuff, and so maybe you see this, but I don't see it.
You hear the word Adderall more in NFL. Over the years when it comes to suspensions than you do, obviously. I mean, I had to Google it, you know, for MLB. I can't remember the last time I heard of a player in Major League Baseball suspended for Adderall. But like I said, the NFL does not come out and say that it's Adderall. I don't think they can legally. But you hear players say, well, I was taking this. There's a lot of references, more references to Adderall in reports with suspended players in the NFL, allegedly. And it's a great point about I know Ingram got suspended. It was for him taking a banned substance, right? Of some sort. I mean... If you got all this money invested, I mean, how do these guys? I mean, I would have everything dissected that I put into my body. Now, can you get? You know, we've heard players in the past. Well, I had some meat or something. That, you know, is that just an excuse? You know, treated with steroids. You know, meat. Didn't know meat was treated with this, that. To me, it's a slippery slope. I don't know the answer to any of this, and I'm just guessing. But how can these guys get themselves suspended, you know, in the NFL for this stuff?
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know, and he's going to miss, obviously, I guess, 4 games now due to, you know, I guess I don't know if he's appealing this or not. You know, they all appeal, it seems like. But
right, he is appealing it.
We probably lost half of our listeners right now, not, you know, wanting to talk about, talking about, you know, drug use and stuff like that. But I'm not shocked when I hear NFL players suspended, you know?
No, I just think we just brush it under the rug and move along.
All right, we can kind of start closing with this. Will Graves from the Associated Press reports, Mason Rudolph says Roethlisberger texted him and wished him luck as rookie minicamp started. Roethlisberger did the same for wide receiver James Washington. Okay, there goes that. the other thing, it doesn't look like the Steelers are going to receive any compensatory picks for any of the stuff that transpired this offseason. During free agency, obviously the team only had Chris Hubbard signed away to a nice contract, and that was obviously with the Cleveland Browns. And as far as players that they added via bulk of free agency, it was John Bostic, Morgan Burnett, and Nat Bure. And it looks like, sounds like all those contracts are going to cancel out each other enough to, even if there was any semblance of something that might qualify, it's going to be outside of the 32 picks that the NFL doles out every year. So this will likely make 2 years in a row that the Steelers will not receive a compensatory draft pick.
What did they get 2 years ago? Did they get a third? That was the big surprise.
What was it?
They thought they were getting a sixth and they got a third.
Yeah, it sounds something third or fourth or something like that.
Yeah. So okay, and you know,
it makes more sense based on, you know, kind of what Hubbard signed for versus, you know, adding up Burnett, Bostic, and Bury. Look, the guy Corte on Over the Cap does a tremendous job, and I can't remember if he nailed all 32 of them this past year. If he didn't, he's got a track record of nailing like either all 32 or 31 every year. So I mean, if he writes it down that it doesn't look like they're going to get a pick, then I'd take it to the bank that they're not going to get a pick.
Yeah, right. I'm with you.
Okay. Believe it or not, we'll probably have a few things to talk about from this rookie mini camp come Monday. A few quotes maybe to toss around, and this player looked like this in shorts and this player didn't look like that in shorts kind of discussion come Monday. And I think that's when we'll do our next show. And I believe that show will be our last one because I'll be out of town for the rest of the week until the following Monday or Tuesday. So, in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. And I think that's it, David. Short and sweet today.
All right. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.